So what I've been doing, and we'll just call this part two of the Meditation for Three Voices, Pathwork Guide Lecture 182 and Chapter 4 of the Independent Self. What I've been doing is building, I want to say an argument because it's the formal word for it, building a case, building an argument for being able to segregate different parts of you into child consciousness, adult ego, and real self, and either concurrently or separately, because these parts don't always match up, taking a look at lower self, mask, and higher self, and seeing if a disharmony that is ongoing in your life can be explored by simply allowing these sections of you to speak. So in using the three-tier meditation, it's similar to the written exercise that I described that's at the end of the chapter 4 in the book. And that is that you simply write things out and you have dialogues with yourself and you keep jotting things down. Or you speak into a tape recorder and then play it back for yourself. These methods are surprisingly effective at allowing you to see what bothers you, if and only if you allow yourself free expression for just a few moments. So again, you need to check at the door. I'm bad, I'm wrong, I've always been like this, nobody will like me if I let this part of me out. And the truth is that you may have been holding this part of you in for so long, afraid that it was bad, that you've never had a really good look at it. So just allowing the part of you to speak that feels that it's been repressed and has energy about that and wants to come out is an amazingly effective way to get started at working with yourself, with your own self-process. Now, that's the written method. When we do in group a three-tier meditation and we have people sit on the couch, what this looks like very often is a process that some of you may be familiar with, and that is voice dialogue. So I'm going to go into a couple of minutes of what shall I call it? Hoopla, I love it, hooray, commercial time, great stuff, try it out, regarding voice dialogue. The tapes that are made by Hal and Sidra Stone are readily available on the market. There are books available on the market, lots in used bookstores. And the process of engaging in voice dialogue is surprisingly simple if you can get a sense of the energy of the voice that you're either trying to address or the voice that comes up. Now, that's really hard to do by yourself, but it is surprisingly simple to get good at this if you work with two other people. So I spent some time, we bought the books and the tapes, and two friends and I met together for 2 hours at a time for about 8 weeks, 8 to 10 weeks, once a week, two hours or so. And every time we met, we would rotate, and we would probably get two sessions in during that two-hour period of time. Now, I don't remember where I was in my studies at that time, but none of us were facilitators at that point, and none of us had any particularly heavy skills in terms of counseling, therapy, facilitation. So we were basically just students on the spiritual path playing around with this stuff. And in that 8 to 10 weeks, I gained a sense of what the energy is of different voices as people spoke them. So what I'm going to state is, I'm not saying you can do this for yourself easily. Doing it for yourself requires a tremendous amount of skill, and I can easily understand why that might be difficult for someone to do. However, working in a group of two or three people, as in a self-led group or with friends, and getting some support through books and tapes, it can be surprisingly easy to become aware of and attuned to the different voices. So I'm saying that as an introduction because I'm going to describe how to do a three-chair meditation. But, of course, I've always done that as the facilitator or when I was facilitated. But when you work as a self-led group or if you work with friends, you can also do this and be effective at it. So I would encourage you to explore this type of work using voice dialogue in the three-chair meditation. So what it looks like is that you have people sit, or one person sit on a couch, three different positions with some props just to be funny about it, and you name the parts that you're going to try to find. Now, that may change, but you name them because it gives you a starting point. And then you ask the person, where do you want to speak from first? And they will choose a place with a name already preassigned, and they'll start to speak from that place. So if someone says, I want to speak with the child consciousness, and they sit in the child place, and the first words out of their mouth are, now I know this is a problem, and I've been, you know, I know that, that's the adult ego. That is not the child consciousness. Even though that person wants to express the child, the adult ego wants to speak, and the adult ego has opinions about this. And to some degree, the adult ego may be part of the problem because the child never gets to express the feelings. So there's two ways you can do this. You can either have the person try to find the child voice, or you can have them move over and sit in the adult ego place and go ahead and let that voice speak. So rather than trying to throttle the voice, that wants the first turn, go ahead and give the voice that wants the first turn a chance to speak. And at some point, that voice will have spoken and the energy will kind of simmer down. And you might be able to encourage them to go back to the position of child consciousness and see what the child says about that. There's some background noise right now, and I wonder if somebody is having some background noise, if you could press *6, that will silence the phone on your end. So I'm going to use this moment to regroup. So if you're doing a three-chair meditation by yourself, and you say, I want to hear the child, it's important to hear what the voice that actually speaks says and to identify that either as a child or as a different voice. Another scenario that could happen is you could sit down and want to be the child voice speaking and realize that you really have the voice of the higher self coming forward, the voice wanting to speak of love, wanting to speak of the distress it feels about this situation. Again, you can move over and give that voice its time, or they might, once they recognize that the higher self in particular, will probably cede to the child consciousness. Now I'm going to stop for a moment and ask if any of this makes any sense at all, because there are times where I used to be a normal person, and now I teach spiritual practices, and I can hear myself talking about voices saying, you need to lock this girl up. So if I've lost anybody in trying to describe this orally on the phone instead of you being here and looking at hand gestures and handouts and so forth, if there's any confusion at this point, please speak up, or if you have any questions.
Okay, Ann, this is Linda, and I've done voice dialogue and certain ways, and when you're asking to speak to the child, my experience has been someone says, may I speak with the child, and then you pause, and then the other person responds, okay, I'm the child, and then the further questions to kind of get into that voice are to ask, well, what do you do as a child? What's your function?
Mm-hmm.
And So it starts a response of just simple answers of what it is like to be the child.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking as the child. So you're answering, I do this, or I like this, I don't like that, or whatever it is that you find.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a way to get into it with just simple questions from the very beginning.
Yeah. Yeah. So did you find that it was effective? Once you asked the questions, did you mm-hmm. find the energy and find the answers coming forward?
Surprisingly simple, really. Surprisingly simple, because there's so many different voices, and you can just it is surprising that you can just step right into them. You recognize them. If you don't recognize them, then that's probably something you've suppressed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So that was my experience when I explored and investigated voice dialogue. Again, I found it such a tremendous tool for us as a self-led group, and it enlarged my capacity to sense into different energies with people. Mm-hmm. It was a tremendous training tool and wonderful for this particular exercise. So were there any other questions about this, or does everybody kind of get what we've gone over so far? Because I'm ready to add another layer. Okay, here we go. So I've spoken about child, adult ego, and divine real self, higher self. I've never quite settled on which word I like. And I've spoken about higher self, lower self, and math. And I want to bring into this pot the concepts of the three spheres of consciousness, because they actually match up quite a bit here. So if we go back to child consciousness, now a lot of the phrases and quotations that I'm using here I got directly out of the book, and I want to acknowledge Susan's book, Susan Tesenga's book, and the fact that this is not all my material, just to be honest about it, and also to honor it because it's excellent material. So I have married this with material I already had about from other teachers as well, since no man is an island and we don't work by ourselves, material that I had already gleaned and processed about the three spheres of consciousness. And I find that they match up well, and they augment and can bring us to a deeper level of understanding, especially of child consciousness and adult child consciousness and adult ego. So in the concept of the three spheres of consciousness, what we have, and I had to do a PowerPoint presentation, so I have a sheet in the online with a lot of diagrams and circles and arrows, and that's fun sometimes because you can point here, over here, this is the higher self and this is the lower self, instead of trying to describe it verbally. But if you can imagine for the individual self sphere that you're all wrapped up in a little bubble all by yourself, okay? It's not that you can't see the rest of the world, but your immediate experience is very much whatever happens to you, your body, and your emotions. Now, the mind develops later. The mind is partly what creates the adult ego. So in terms of a tight, juvenile, individual self-sphere, it's very similar to the child consciousness. And from a spiritual perspective, and this is where we shift away from psychology, from a spiritual perspective, spirit moves through child consciousness, adult ego, and the higher divine self. There's a developmental arc that is deliberate. So, for instance, one might say, well, the child has total access to God. It has joy and pleasure and delight. Why don't we just let it grow up unspoiled, because it's already there, and then we won't have to do any work? Well, number one, that's not going to happen on this planet. No child grows up untouched and unspoiled. And I don't mean spoiled in the good way, but spoiled in the dented way. So no child grows up without having to deal with the difficulties of the human plane. And secondly, from a spiritual perspective, it's not intended to do so. I keep being reminded when I read the lectures and I work with the concepts of the all the myths and legends and folk stories that I have heard over the years. And there's a commonality to them. And one of the commonalities is that you don't value what you've got until you lose it. And then you go through hell and high water, and you slay the dragons, and you go to the ends of the earth and back to get it back so that you value it and you will never let it go again. And we are not talking on a materialistic level. We're talking about finding our heart's desire.
Yeah.
There isn't a culture on the planet that doesn't have stories like that. Because that is the human experience.
Mm-hmm.
And on a spiritual level, we were intended to be lovely and chubby and happy and lose it. But remember, in the back of our minds, to remember the pleasure and the freedom and the delight of that being and spend the rest of our life regaining access to that part of us and creating a wonderful playpen and letting it out and letting it play and holding the world away from it, saying, no, my child, my creativity, my spontaneity is going to see the light of day and is going to play. I have learned what not to do. Now that is, they call it the hero's journey in a lot of the story and mythological and so forth. Okay, the hero's journey follows that pattern. On a spiritual perspective, the way I see it is we follow that pattern. So it is not an accident that we lose our child qualities or bury them or repress them, because it is our journey to regain them.
Mm-hmm.
So there's an arc that goes from the individual self sphere of being born on this planet within the duality that convinces us that our body and our emotions are the only thing that matter, and to grow up and have those thwarted and repressed, to develop our own ego and find out that it is just as tough, if not worse, than any other authority figure we've ever met. Naturally, because we built our adult ego based on the models that we observed, with all their faults and all their short-sightedness, buying into fear, buying into the myth that there is not enough, buying into the idea that we must repress joy in order to not lose it, when the actual repression is what's going to have us lose it.
Mm-hmm.
So we go from the child consciousness into the phase of adult ego, mimicking the people around us and doing the same thing to ourselves that they did. Or sometimes what we do is we do strike out on our own and find out that there is no simple solution, that going to the left and going to the right, we all wind up in the same place. And then, within the self-actualization that human beings are capable of realizing that it's time to make a change. Now, I speak in dramatic terms because it's easier. For some people, a dramatic turn in their life is tweaking something at the end of their years. That can be just as important a spiritual lesson as completely revamping and reshaping your entire life. There's no specific value or quality that has to happen here. But human beings follow an inner path, an inner guidance, an inner call towards growth and self-actualization. And whether it is tiny or dramatic, we are all on this journey. So going back to the three spheres again, that in the individual self-sphere, okay, which is the least developed in terms of perception, okay, which is full of child consciousness about mine, naturally, because there's nothing else. You fill up the majority of your little bubble. So of course your universe would be full of you, and therefore mine would become a mantra to you. The reality, of course, is here and now. The focus is on personal need because your universe is so small. And that's where we develop duality, dualistic thinking. Mine or yours. Hungry or not hungry. Pleasure or not pleasure. Now, sometimes not pleasure becomes pain. But at some point, we make a decision that every time we leave pleasure, we could be headed towards pain. So not having pleasure is the threshold of the door to pain. And we retract from that. So we develop a push towards what we consider positive and a retraction away from what we consider negative, all based on a very limited perception. So you can see how individual self-sphere meshes so well with child consciousness. Now, we're intended to grow out of that. That is the plan. That's the intention. And that's why we develop the adult ego. And the adult ego tries to hold on to many of the elements of the second sphere, which is the universal self-sphere. And in the universal self-sphere, we've got more development. We recognize other members of humanity. We begin to include other people in our bubble. We realize that reality is complex, that there aren't any simple answers. Our focus becomes a focus. I'm going to have to apologize. Apparently the phone lines are back on. I've got to shut off my phone. Sorry about that. Oh, dear. Technology day again. Back to universal self-sphere. That our focus becomes upon group needs rather than our own individual needs. And we start to realize that life is not all good or all bad, that some days there's a mixture. And we start working with the concept of and rather than only seeing the concept of or. Now, the dilemma here is that universal self-sphere is a transition process. And what happens in the universal self-sphere is you begin the process of including other people. But if that process stalls, if that process only includes, for instance, me and my family, me and my village, me and my town or my state or my nation. If it stops at some point, you can still have all the elements of the individual self-sphere simply in a larger sphere. So the universal self-sphere has the potential to include all of humanity. But it is a process. So this is where the adult ego has the potential to support any aspect of life that we need to be to have supported. But it also may, out of fear, out of prejudice, and out of the superstition, it may cling to only wanting to make the conscious choices that are in our self-interest. So it has the capacity to make conscious choice, but it doesn't want... Sorry, there was noise there. It has the capacity to make conscious choice, but it does not want to risk. So it narrows and it follows a self-interest path and does not continue to broaden its horizons and its perceptions. So if the universal self-seer stays in process and it stays in growth, then it can develop fully and cleanly. But if it becomes narrow and self-interested, it becomes a larger version of the individual self-sphere. A lot of spiritual practices spend a lot of time working with what this system of spheres calls the God sphere. And that is everything. So I've spoken of the individual self-sphere, which is a sense of my own body and my own life. The universal self-sphere, which in transition would eventually include all life, all conscious life, all human beings. At some point we may have to enlarge that to all planets or the universe. But even so, there is a realm, and that's what the phrase, once again we're using words here to try to describe a cosmic reality that we may not understand. So you could use the phrase cosmic sphere, you could use the phrase God sphere to describe the world that includes spirit, of which we are a portion. So an analogy of that would obviously be we are one solar system, there are many solar systems. The solar systems make up the Milky Way. The Milky Way is one of many galaxies, there are many galaxies, etc., etc. I don't know where the end of the universe is, but the cosmic or God sphere would include all that there is. And we don't live there. We live on the earth. So what I started to say was that many spiritual practices attempt to access on an energetic level the God sphere. And we can do that for short periods of time. But most of us can't stay there. And again, I'm going to suggest that we weren't meant to stay there. Because to some extent, since that cosmic sphere is everywhere and includes everything, we're already there. So we don't have to work at being in the cosmic sphere. Our work can become allowing ourselves to receive the energy of the cosmic sphere. And that energy would be that of enlightenment, of all consciousness. It would transcend our human reality and our need to be focused on our lives. And it can be identified energetically by a sense of peace and safety. So, for instance, if you ever want to know, how do I know that I'm accessing my higher self? One of the questions you can ask is, how does it feel? Well, it feels a little anxious. Well, that's not your higher self. Your higher real God self is never going to be anxious because the rice is going to burn. That's just not the level that it deals with. That part of you is certain that whatever happens will work out one way or the other. You know, we'll work with it. Because it is the part of you that is attached to the cosmic or God sphere. So when we reach that level of self-actualization as people, one of the words that Susan uses for this in her book is the soul transpersonal level, okay, where she describes that there are no boundaries, that we have no limits in terms of time or space, that on the soul personal level, soul transpersonal level, we cannot die because we were never born. And that's part of what gives us this sense of peace and safety. How can you damage spirit? Spirit is not tissue. On a soul transpersonal level, we have an intuitive knowledge of past and present, as well as future possibilities. And by intuitive knowledge, I mean exactly that. Not the detailed knowledge, because the details don't matter on a soul transpersonal level. What we have is an intuitive knowing of where we have come from, where we are, and where we may be going without having a demand about how that will enact. And also, on the soul transpersonal level, we have a letting go into the involuntary processes and spontaneous feelings on higher levels of consciousness. And what I am doing here is I am marrying up elements of the individual self-sphere to child consciousness, the universal self-sphere to adult ego, although that's not a complete match, and the cosmic or God sphere with the soul transpersonal level that humans can achieve. Again, we don't stay there. We don't live there. We still have to go to the grocery store. We still have to wash. And we still have to account for the amounts of materials we use, and we have to rebuy supplies. And we were meant to do that. It's not an accident, and it's not a bad thing. We were meant to have to deal with the craziness of the earth plane. There's something here for us to learn. It can be as simple as if we really find the peace and safety of the cosmic sphere, and we lose it because the mail is late, we never really had it. So we need to be tested throughout our lives. Do you still retain it? Can you retain this wonderful sense of God and safety and all-knowingness when difficulties happen around you? Can you hold space for other people? Can you share? If you have it, can you share it? Can you hold this energy out to others and be present with them, even if you are being present as a cashier in a supermarket? Once again, values don't work here. This is about holding the energy of the transpersonal level and functioning on the planet, staying alive, doing the business that we have to do to stay alive. So again, what the intention here is to widen these things out. And if you are specifically interested in child consciousness and adult ego, work there. Because your interest should be respected on some level as an eros. And if you are interested in working there and that's what's present in your life, I invite you to honor that. And I put out more materials about other aspects because there's a variety of people and a variety of things that they wish to look at and go after. So I try to put out enough materials so that no matter where somebody is on their process, they might find something of value here. So that's pretty much the presentation that I had. Are there any other questions?
Wow.
You get into spiritual work, it gets pretty heavy, huh?
Well, I was struck by your use of the word heart's desire. You know, just sort of came alive and just was dingling in front of me. You know, it's like, yes, there is that, and it is present. And just seeing it.
Mm-hmm. So in one of the previous teleconferences, I focused on the Lecture 44, which is the forces of love, eros, and love, eros, and sex. And that lecture, to me, is about really honoring eros as a soul movement, as a marker of where you should be and what you should be doing. So translating that, I would translate heart's desire into a movement of eros.
And well, I haven't listened to it, so I will have to listen to see what you're meaning there.
Well, you also just read the lecture. It's Lecture 44.
Okay.
And what I'm suggesting is that part of our work as spiritual beings is to really get this balance. And balance is key to a lot of this. I find it interesting that we keep talking about threes in the lecture because that makes the perfect stool, three legs. It creates the ability to hold balance. Okay? So if balance is key, then you would spiritually know when your life was not in balance. And you would reach out for something that would put you in balance. But in the reaching out, you may be even further out of balance. That is part of living. So as we extend to grow into something new, we aren't quite ready for it yet. So when your heart's desire shows itself, it may seem very impossible if you get an image of what that heart's desire is. But that may simply mean that you're not ready for it, that's going to be a journey that you're going to take. And your heart's desire, I'm trying to think of some, I like to think of inane examples because they're funny and because they're simple and because they're somewhat universal. So if you see something and you want it very, very much, like you would go to a play and you would hear a song, or go to a concert and you would hear a song, and your heart might move, and you might start having a desire to have more music in your life. Okay? That could be interpreted as materialistic. Oh, you just want more songs, or you just want more pleasure. Not necessarily. Perhaps the heart's desire is speaking to you about gaining more appreciation for the work that other people do, for reaching out and experiencing what it's like to create music. And the more music they hear and the more knowledgeable you are about music, then the more you can share, perhaps, the beauty of what they're doing. Enlarging your universal self-sphere to include an entire realm of people whose life work is music. You don't have to be a musician to appreciate music and to have it be part of your life. So that's a really good example.
It's a really good example. Thank you. Sorry.
Yeah, no, that's okay. So by following our heart's desire, we have the capacity to enlarge our where we are in the universal self-sphere. Now, the purpose of the adult ego is to say, don't put it on your charge card. Wait a minute. We've been doing that a lot lately, and that's getting us into trouble. I'll tell you what. Let's be creative, and let's go down to the used record store or the used CD store. Okay, there's a way for us to get what we want without simply impulsively reaching out for the first thing in front of us. That's the job of the adult ego, to serve the spontaneity and creativity of the child consciousness and to allow the divine self to inhabit more of our being. That's its job. The more generous and loving and wise the adult ego is, the more capable they are of giving us our heart's desire. Yeah. So are there any other questions, or are we perhaps done? like we're done. I had put out that I'm willing to get back on the phone at 7 o'clock when this is not recorded, and have up to a 1 hour conversation with anybody who wants to join me at that time. So that because it's not recorded, I'm happy to, you know, we can go into more personal details or share on a more casual level. So all I'm suggesting is this might be the end of the tape that I make available on the internet. And it does sound like we're done at the moment. So I thank you, and I very much appreciate everybody's tolerance with all this technical stuff. I thought I had everything wired this time so that it would work perfectly, and the storm comes into town and knocks out the phone lines. So, best laid plans.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Dan. Dan, this is beautiful. I appreciate it so much. Thank you.